Well, Twitter me this, Batman. Why would there be a huge hashtag on front of the GOP Convention Center in Tampa? Our tech guru Jesse Feiler says it shows the prominence of social media during the campaigns, kicking off during the political conventions going on now. Jesse Feiler provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. He is the author of a number of books on FileMaker and Mac OS X, as well as new technologies such as Mashups, Facebook, and Bento. His latest book, Data-Driven iOS Apps for iPad and iPhone with FileMaker Pro, Bento by FileMaker and FileMaker Go. His website is NorthCountryConsulting.com. Jesse, always a pleasure. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
A lot has changed in the social media world since 4 years ago when we had conventions.
Yes. And I started looking back on what's happened and realized that it's really a bigger issue than I had thought originally, because I'm sure you understand. What is the purpose of presidential campaigns in the U.S.?
To elect a president of the United States.
So many people think that.
What is the actual answer to that?
To showcase the latest communication technology.
Ah, that.
For example, if you think of FDR, what a lot of people think about is fireside chats.
Right.
And the first president to use radio, really understand it.
Yes. The televised debate with Kennedy.
You nailed that one.
Yep.
And for social media, you know, Twitter, things like that, which president comes to mind?
Barack Obama.
Yeah. And the campaign, of course, that started it was Howard Dean. But that's what happens. Every 4 years, we focus on a new way of communicating and getting people involved and getting messages out. And now we're living in the world of social media.
So the fact that it cannot be, I guess, underscored, but you look at the fact that there is a hashtag on the huge banner that is outside of the Tampa Convention Center, and that says a lot.
It says an enormous amount about how social media work. First of all, the banner says, it's on the website, it's on NorthCountryConsulting.com, and it's also over the web on news articles and so forth. It's the banner on the right. It says Republican National Convention 2012, and then vertically on the left it says Tampa Bay, a rather nice graphic. And at the bottom it says #GOP 2012. And the first thing to notice about that is that some people won't know what that #GOP 2012 is. But an awful lot of people will know what it is. It's a Twitter hashtag. And what we've done is we're making this interesting transition from things like websites that people go to the way they pick up a newspaper or turn on the radio or something. People actively do something to find out news and get information. Now what they're doing is there isn't a place to go to when you want information about, let's say, #GOP 2012. That's what you type in, and that information comes to you from wherever it happens to be in the Twitter universe. So that's what's interesting. People, first of all, do know what this is. And when you're organizing an event where you want social media to pick it up and you want people to tweet about it and so forth, the very first thing that people do, and they've known this for several years, but now it's becoming really, really stressed. As soon as you forge an event, print programs, print banners, advertise it, whatever, you get your hashtag out there so that when people do tweet about it, all those tweets will be collected in the right place. The worst thing that can happen is if you wind up with a whole bunch of hashtags and the conversation is diffuse.
Right.
So picking the hashtag and publicizing it, whether it's for a political convention, for a conference, for a class, whatever, saying, hey, here's where we're going to talk about it.
So, I mean, I know this from whether it's the from watching something, whether it be the State of the Union address or the Grammys or the Oscars or the Tonys or something, where often you will have, you know, hashtag Oscars. And what it ultimately becomes is a bunch of people making snarky comments about how bad the show is. So all I can imagine is for the next two nights, just people sitting there on their sofas watching this and making Democrats and Republicans alike making snarky comments about the convention.
But now Let me pose a sort of hypothetical question. If people are sitting around in a neighborhood bar or pub or whatever, or coffee shop,
right,
discussing the convention.
They're making snarky comments.
Yes. So in what way is that different from snarky comments on the internet with a hashtag?
Okay. So, but as you say, it collects it all into one place. So if now I go and I say, all right, I want to go see the Twitter feeds, my message that is up there on that Twitter feed is not all positive.
Right. And people, there's an old saying in the media, in the PR world, it doesn't matter as long as they spell your name right.
Right.
So if people are talking about candidate A or candidate B, even if they're talking snarkily, if that may be a word, there is something positive to it, many people would say. If it's totally unbalanced, then you have issues. It may be the case that, I mean, you have to look at every case specifically. Remember that for the extreme cases with social media, if people step over a line and it's spelled out in the terms of service, you can get in touch with Facebook or Twitter, whatever. I mean, if they issue threats, if they, you know, say someone should kill so-and-so, that can be disposed of very quickly because that's illegal.
Right.
So as long as it stays in sort of the barroom discussion without throwing anything, it at least shows that people are interested. And there's no reason not to have multiple hashtags. I mean, this is the official GOP convention hashtag. So I would imagine there might be another hashtag out there that says...
GOP sucks.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Yeah, you know, or Democrats suck.
Right,
yeah, you know,
whatever.
So people who want reinforcements and want to talk snarkily or whatever on one side or the other can get together and do that.
So how do you see this? You have some amazing figures here that, you know, we didn't even have an iPad the last presidential go-around.
Yeah.
And now we do. Mm-hmm. And the number of iPhones and smartphones was greatly reduced. You had 100 million people on Facebook. Now you've got, what,
955 million
people on Facebook. So this is a huge, this is the red, white, and blue elephant in the room, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that there are a number of articles here, and one of the things that's coming out is that, and we're seeing it every day in the coverage, is how the networks are working with this and how the new media are working with this, because we're all still learning. You know, we don't know how this plays out. You bring up the thing, what do you do if you have a Twitter feed and people are using the hashtag and saying nasty things?
Yeah.
We don't really know how that plays out. We don't know. The ultimate question that we come down to that we've talked about before is if someone likes a Facebook page or a person on Facebook or a campaign on Facebook, we know a few days ago Romney had 5 million likes for his campaign page, and Obama had at that point 29 million. Now, what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
No one knows.
I mean, it means...
Lady Gaga probably had far more.
Right. But the president also has been around for 4 years. He's been running twice. And so, you know, there's a... Right?
Yes. But everyone is looking for, over the years, on Facebook particularly, we were all looking for the magic formula that says, okay, if a singer has X number of likes, you can use this formula and predict the number of albums that singer will sell with the next album that comes out. There is no such formula.
You can't.
Even with two contenders for a political office, you can say this one has more than the other one. What does that mean? Absolutely no one knows. There are some extreme cases where we do know what it means. For example, there's one regional race for Congress, and I won't say which one it is. The incumbent has on the Facebook page, I looked the other day, 1,800 likes. Now, when we talk about 29 million likes for the Obama campaign and 5 million for Romney, when a regional politician has 1,800, we don't know if that's good or bad, but we know it says something.
Yeah.
The challenger has zero. That definitely says something. If it was 1,800 to 180, I would say it shows.
Well, do they even have a page?
Yeah.
Okay.
And apparently none of them has a friend.
You think you could get your spouse or something?
I mean, yeah, please. You know, it's, you know, it's... I don't know what that, but that says something. A zero says something. It also may say that someone has made a mistake in setting up the page, just as, and that's the significance of the hashtag. You want to make certain that if someone is going to Joe Donahue for president, that's the right page they should be going to, rather than Joe Donahue for king.
Yeah.
or whatever, you know. That's why. A lot of people think with social media, it's just a matter of doing it for free and putting it up. But it's not. There's a tremendous amount of work, just as much work as there was with licking envelopes.
Right.
But you get fewer paper cuts.
You know, I was thinking, I was reading through some of the links that you sent over, which you can find, by the way, on NorthCountryConsulting.com. And what I was thinking of is, you know, 4-8 years ago, when not so much during the conventions, but during a little bit during the conventions, but mostly during the debates, they would have the obligatory group of undecided voters who were in a school auditorium, and they were hooked up, and they would have all these meters going off and telling them how they felt about what this candidate said about this or what that candidate said about that. And really, that's all out the window now, because we all have this technology in our, or most of us, in our grasp to tell people exactly how we feel about a particular thing.
And more than one network is, some have announced this, others are just doing it, are using split screens, with yeah. one half of the screen being what's happening in, you know, the convention hall, let's say, and the other half being a Twitter feed. Relying on hashtags.
So let me ask you this provocative question.
Thank you.
Is it news? In the sense that I was watching the Olympics. NBC is covering the Olympics. And NBC came under a great deal of criticism for not carrying some Olympic events live. So a great swimming match would go off at 10 o'clock in the morning, our time, and then they would hold it. Meanwhile, the results have been all over the radio, all over television, and they would hold it until 11:30 at night, prime time. So they came under a great deal of fire for that. So you tune in to NBC that night to see the big match with Michael Phelps and Ryan Lochte, and you want to see that. And they say, okay, we're going to go to the Olympic Center and see the swimming match. But first, let's go to Ryan Seacrest, who is going to tell us about how people feel on Twitter. And Ryan has been watching Facebook and Twitter and is now going to report on what people are saying.
Well,
is that news or is that a waste of time?
Nothing is a waste of time. Everything in this world is useful to someone for something.
That's why I love you.
That's why I get up in the morning.
Okay. All right. But, I'll give you that.
But what I think was interesting from what I read, and I haven't studied every part of this, is that this issue of holding the television for prime time.
Yeah.
Towards the end, it may have been only on the final day, they streamed events live over the web.
Yeah.
And I read a couple of places that that didn't harm the ratings for the TV shows.
No, no.
And if that holds up, and we'll see it because there are some live streams from the conventions happening this week and next. If that holds up, if the networks and how the networks will evolve is a separate question. But if it turns out that you can do a live web stream and satisfy the people who want the information at that moment, and then do a primetime broadcast for people who either want to see it on a bigger screen or are not following every thing over the live stream, if the networks can still get the eyeballs that they want for the prime time, even though they've streamed it live, That's a very interesting piece of information. I don't know where we'll go with it.
It seems to me, I guess this is, maybe I've thought about this too much, but you watch a network and you watch their coverage of the convention, assuming they're even covering it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you watch their convention coverage. And then they tell you, as you said, the networks are going to have a split screen where the Twitter feed is going to be there so you can read along and see what people say. My point is, but I can go to Twitter and see that. You know what I mean? So it becomes like they're offering a service that I already have.
Are you asking whether there is a role for media networks in today's world? Because you're not the only one.
Well, I don't know that I'm. I think they obviously have a role, but it seems to be duplication of services. If I'm watching coverage and they are covering what people are saying on Twitter, when I can just go to Twitter and see what people are saying on Twitter.
Yeah, and everyone is asking this question, and everyone is coming up. Everyone is looking. I don't think anyone has come up with the answer yet. My feeling is, just based on sort of observing what I do, which is certainly not typical, I hope, but.
Never typical. No, never typical answer. Don't worry about that.
But there are some things that I follow very closely to the extent that I will sometimes read the same article by accident twice.
Right.
And it happens, for me, it happens with newspaper articles that are updated during the day, and they usually update the first two paragraphs. And you get down to the third paragraph and you say, oh, I read this already. But if it's something I really care about, for example, most recently, I mean, this is really sick. It was the Samsung-Apple trial.
Yeah.
And I read a lot of that, particularly when the verdict came in.
It was a fascinating story.
It's absolutely fascinating. And I didn't mind that I read the same article twice.
And continually fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I did not – other major – world events, I did not follow that closely. For example, I felt, although I did read the things about the trial several times, I felt that watching Her Majesty parachute into the Olympics was worth one viewing. And I mean that with no disrespect.
I find it fascinating because I wrestle with this in the sense of the discussion I have in my head is, okay, I understand why the network is doing that, but by the same, and also, how is that any different from the quote-unquote man on the street interview? It really isn't, is it?
No, it isn't. And the issue about how is it different from doing it yourself with Twitter?
Yeah.
There's one very, very big difference to that. And I get it all the time because I'm a consultant. I develop software. And I write books about it. And sometimes someone will come to me and say, you know, will you help me do such and such? And I will say, well, I've written about it, you know. And, you know, for $35 you can get the book.
Right.
But I would have to charge you much more than that for doing it. But it took me a long time to figure out that there's some people who, it doesn't matter if the book was free or they get it from the library, they don't want to do that. So if you are, for example, will be gender neutral, a man ironing something, ironing a shirt, it is very difficult to follow a Twitter feed while you are ironing a shirt.
Yes.
But you can follow a TV screen.
Yeah.
So that's one of the differences. I mean, it's trivial, but it is a difference.
Well, one of the things is I guess it comes also down to, is Facebook a product? Is Twitter a product? Because I see in advertising now, whether it be for toothpaste or applesauce, that Twitter and Facebook are included within the context of those advertisements. And it's an interesting crossover to me because it's not only advertising the applesauce, it's also advertising Twitter and Facebook.
Because in some ways they are competitors.
Yeah.
And that's why I love what I do, because it's we don't know. We have no idea how this is going to play out. This whole changing of the media world. That's so fascinating.
You know, there was never a time, in my knowledge anyway, where you would see like a cross of a message. In other words, if the advertisement was for Staples and the mom and the kid are going to the store to get school supplies, they would never make a big deal that they were getting into a Chevy. It would always just be the car. But now it is, okay, we're going to get school supplies, and I can make my list at Facebook or Twitter, and I can do this and so forth and so on.
Because well, first of all, remember, people are using the technologies in a different way than was being done 4 or 5 years ago,
right?
Even last year. I mean, so we do have these things. People expect to be able to make a list on Facebook.
So are you ready for my my final provocative question?
I hope so.
Will this help democracy?
Well, as I said before, I'm basically an optimist, and I think everything helps democracy. It has to. Yeah. Why else would we go on?
So, I mean, you would hope that if we have more of a voice, and that if we have 955 million active users on Facebook, and we can use that voice in some way, that it would have an impact.
It does seem to. And in one of the articles that I linked to from the Pew Center for Excellence in Journalism, one of the questions that they asked is why people follow current events, you know, on Twitter or whatever.
Right.
And one of the very popular answers, it might have been the most popular answer, is people follow events so they have something to talk about with their friends.
Yeah. Well,
that's not new.
No, that's
and
age old.
I think that's positive.
Jesse Feiler provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. We talked about a lot of links this morning. You can find them all at his website, northcountryconsulting.com. Northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse is very nice and puts all that information up there for us. And you can just go to his website and check out what we've been talking about. Northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse, it's always a pleasure. I thank you very much, as always.
Thank you.
Enjoy the conventions.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.